The Secrets of Star Trek is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to The Secrets of Star Trek, where we discuss the hidden layers and deeper meanings found in all the Star Trek TV series, movies, and more. And today we're discussing the Enterprise episode, Fallen Hero. I'm Dom Bettinelli, and joining me today on the panel are Father Corey Stika. Hey, Father Corey.
How's it going?
And Jimmy Akin. Hey, Jimmy.
Howdy, Dom.
Folks, be sure to share the podcast with your friends. Help us grow this community of Star Trek fans and reach even more listeners. And I want to tell you about another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy called The Secrets of Doctor Who, which you can find wherever fine podcasts are found, or at sqpn.com/Doctor Who. So we are discussing this Fallen Hero. It's the first season Enterprise 23rd episode. And Jimmy, can you give us a recap of what happens in this story?
This week we get a bottle episode in which Captain Archer and the gang have to urgently transport a Vulcan ambassador from the planet that she was assigned to ambassador to. They're told that the ambassador, Valar, has been expelled because of criminal offenses, and Valar won't explain or defend herself to Archer, suggesting that she's guilty, which is a disappointment to T'Pol, who has idolized Valar for a long time, making Valar a fallen hero, and we have a title. But we get a plot twist when a ship from the planet arrives and says the aliens have had a change of heart. They want to bring Valar back to the planet for further questioning. But instead of letting Archer contact Starfleet to get permission, they jam Enterprise communications and attack, proving what skunks they are, which we already knew because they've got these skunk hairdos. When Valar won't explain to Archer what's going on, he decides to take her back to the planet rather than risk the crew. But on the way there, T'Pol has a private conversation with Valar, and she convinces her that she's innocent and that she'll be killed if she goes back to the planet. So, based on T'Pol's confidence with Valar, Archer reverses course once again and heads for a rendezvous they're supposed to have with a Vulcan ship. This brings on new attacks by the skunky aliens, which forces Valar to come clean with Archer and tell him the whole story. The aliens chasing them are criminal skunks, and they've infiltrated and corrupted the alien government. She was there at the request of the good aliens on the planet to gather evidence against the bad ones, and she's scheduled to testify in 3 months against them. It was decided that she'd be safer if she was taken back to Vulcan for that period, and to fool the skunky aliens into thinking that she won't be a credible witness, the expulsion for criminal offenses story was cooked up. Archer appreciates the fact that she finally decided to trust humans with this information, and the Enterprise pushes its engines all the way up to Warp 5 to try to outrun them. It also tries to send a desperate message to the Vulcan ship, asking it to arrive as soon as possible. Ultimately, the aliens board Enterprise and demand Valar, but Archer lies to them and tells them Valar was injured and is in sickbay. The aliens go to sickbay and shoot up Dr. Phlox's imaging chamber, believing that they've killed Valar. Then the Vulcans arrive and neutralize the alien threat, since they're just more powerful. But rather than let the aliens think Valar is dead, she confronts them and tells them she'll include this account of attempted murder at their trial. They then let the aliens go. Archer says Valar said there was a good reason for this, but she didn't tell him what it was, and the audience doesn't know what it is either. But at the end, we have an improvement of trust in relations between humans and Vulcans, even if that trust only goes so far. The end.
Father Corey, your overall impression?
This was an all right episode. Of course, there was a lot of the, we got to amp the drama by, I'm not going to tell you what's going on until I absolutely positively have to. And even then, I'm going to keep holding things back until I absolutely positively have to. And of course, you got the drama of the engines are only rated for Warp 5 on paper. We've never taken it that far, Captain. She's going to blow. Yeah, it's an okay episode. It wasn't great.
Jimmy?
Yeah, it's an okay episode. I enjoyed it. I especially like the actress who plays Valar. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that even though we have withholding of information unnecessarily, which is a classic Writing crutch. I mean, it's the only – it gets used, for example, in the Sherlock Holmes stories where the only reason we have the story of the yellow face and – or the yellow mask, and the only reason we have the story of the Sussex vampire is because women in the stories decided not to do the obvious thing and tell their husbands the truth at the very first moment. That would have just collapsed the story, and Sherlock would never have been called in. So I'm not a fan of that writing technique, but given that it's used here, I do like the fact that they eventually come up with an explanation that makes sense. You know, I mean, there is a reason why they expelled Valar and came up with this criminal offenses story, even though she's really innocent. And, you know, that all makes sense. So I like that. I'm less jazzed about, you know, other stuff in the episode, but overall it was okay.
The actress is Fionnuala Flanagan, who's been on a couple times on Star Trek in different series. And she's a great Irish actress. If you've ever seen Waking Ned Divine, you've seen her in that. Yeah. She was really great.
I also want to point out about her acting that I've often said, if, you know, a lot of actors portraying Vulcans do is they portray the Vulcan as if they're really angry all the time and are suppressing the anger.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've said is, if I were ever called upon to play a Vulcan, I would want to play not a repressed angry Vulcan, but a repressed Sirenite, someone who's secretly happy and is repressing the happiness, not to stand out to other Vulcans. And someone like Cybok, you know, or some of the other Sirenites we've seen who are happy and have no problem with their emotions. And I think Valar may be my repressed Sirenite because she is so relaxed and cheerful most of the time. She's just a delight.
She's open to other cultures and wanting to learn about them and, you know, and experience it and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And T'Pol has her completely wrong because even though she's idolized Valar for years, apparently, she doesn't really understand her as a person, because before Valar gets there, she's composed this list of protocols for how to treat a Vulcan ambassador. And it's like, don't expect her to – don't speak unless spoken to. Don't expect her to interact with the crew much. She's going to want to spend all her time in her quarters. She's going to want super Spartan quarters that don't have any decorations in them. And do not try to shake her hand.
Yeah.
And
the very first thing she does.
T'Pol is wrong about everything. Yeah. You know, she comes on board. First thing she does is shake Captain Archer's hand. With her taking the initiative, she comments on the Spartanness of her quarters as if, oh, darn, I was hoping to get more of a sense of the Earth culture from the decorations of the person whose quarters these normally are, which is Hoshi.
Right.
And she's entirely interested in interacting with the crew. She doesn't want to spend time by herself.
Yeah. Mm. Well, the actress, by the way, she looks familiar. Like Don said, she's been in Star Trek quite a few times. She played Anina Tandro from the episode Dax, DS9 episode Dax. She was the one that Corazon Dax had the affair with.
Hmm. Right. That's right. He was protecting her.
But going back to her acting, I like that where she does the handshake. And instead of doing, like, you know, we go like kind of about straight out with our handshake. Mm-hmm. She does like this overhand.
Yeah.
Like shoulder high handshake.
Like someone who's not
dramatic gesture.
Yeah. It's not a natural action for them to do.
It's not something she's familiar with. So she's still learning what it means to shake a hand, you know, and how to do it.
I'm personally, though, I'm on the Vulcan side of handshakes. I do not like handshakes. I carry hand sanitizer in my pocket and use it conspicuously in front of people after they've shook my hand. So they'll hopefully realize not to do that again. Yeah. And sometimes I will just fold my hands together and bow to the person.
Well, that's
I prefer the COVID, you know, elbow bump.
Oh, no. See, I refuse to do the elbow. I refuse to do the elbow bump, but I always said I'll do the Vulcan salute.
Yeah, I'll do the Vulcan salute. I'll do the Wakandan salute. Yeah, but
there you go.
But but no handshakes, please.
Yes. We'll leave that at that. The episode does start with a sort of non sequitur shore leave thing where
almost get to go to Risa.
The very first scene, T'Pol's asking Archer and Tucker about their I'm trying to be delicate in a family
podcast. They haven't been laid lately. Is that causing a problem?
So enough. So much for delicacy.
And,
but yes,
and DePaul was apparently just that blunt.
Yeah,
but we didn't see her question. Instead, we see the reaction that Trip and Archer have to
choking on their
that
dinner
question. Yeah. Yes.
And because she thinks that the crew has the efficiency has dropped and the crew
by 3%.
Yes. So therefore, we should go on shore leave. And then she suggests Ryza, which the funny thing of this is everyone in the audience knows what Ryza means.
Yeah.
Nobody on the crew does. And so we're like, oh yeah. So it does mean that Ryza has been known since before TOS, which means, maybe Ryza will show up in like Strange New Worlds at some point. That would be,
I'm sure kind of it will.
Funny.
I could do without that.
Yeah, yeah, same
and,
here.
And they do get to Ryza in a couple of episodes, so we will see the Enterprise version. Because there's actually, if you look at the Memory Alpha wiki, it actually has an arc, Journey to Ryza, and this is part one of three of the Journey to Ryza arc.
I didn't see that.
I do. Even though I kind of have a conceptual, I could do without this subplot, frankly, but I do have a conceptual appreciation of what T'Pol is trying to do, because they immediately say, well, you've been out here just as long as the rest of us. She's like, we only made every 7 years. And, and given that, it's like, okay, well, if I'm a Vulcan, I know I only, especially a Vulcan female, I only made every 7 years, so I don't really need it. But these humans, they like mate constantly. Could that be why things are 3% less efficient? And so she's trying, you know, it's a reasonable question to ask if these species were real and you were coming from a Vulcan perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't have human sensibilities. Although after having been a kind of Earth ambassador type person, you know, at the diplomatic compound in San Francisco, she should have learned about how to discuss these subjects with humans.
Right.
What I find frightening is you're measuring the crew's efficiency in terms of analytics of like 3%. And wow, that's a little Orwellian.
Well, in fact, Star Trek does this all the time, doesn't it? Like, you know, Worf, in the most recent one we talked about with the DS9, Worf was all about efficiency is down 2% or something.
Is that by like how much paperwork they push? I mean, that is a government thing. If you're dealing with the government, are you doing your proper amount of paperwork? But
yeah, it does not sound like a place I would want to work, to have my superiors measuring my efficiency in percentiles and not taking account of normal ups and downs of 2 or 3%.
Right, exactly. Well, in any case, we have shore leave interrupt us because they have to go pick up the Vulcan ambassador. That could be taken in different ways.
Yeah, you had to go there.
So Tucker has to put away his Hawaiian shirt. So, as we mentioned, they pick up Valar. Like, they get to the planet, the Mazar, and they're like, here's your hat, what's your hurry? You know, here she is. She's already there, coming on board.
And the aliens, the Mazarites, really do have skunk-looking hair. It's like black with white stripes.
Yes, they are the Pepe Le Pew of the aliens. And she's unconventional, as you mentioned. She, besides the shaking hands, she jokes with Tucker about her age, which I thought was a nice moment where, you know, I took it, Commander Tucker, that human men never ask human women about their age. And he's very flustered. It was a very good moment. I like that.
And that goes into again where it does look like she's suppressing, you know, a smile. I mean, literally, like, you can see, like, she's almost struggling not to smile as she's saying this.
Yeah.
Right.
She also puts T'Pol on the spot here and says, well, suffice it to say, between me and T'Pol, you're dining with the two most elderly people on the ship.
Yes.
Which is true. T'Pol would have been 65 at this time.
Right, right. So we have this confrontation, shall we say, or just explanation from T'Pol of how she, you know, she was her fallen hero, that she had idolized her when T'Pol was younger. And And even T'Pol says that she probably doesn't remember, but I confronted her at a conference years ago. And later on, Valar will say, oh, no, I remember the temerity of this young person coming up to tell me that I'm wrong. So I thought that was a nice moment.
And she also says that that what T'Pol's comments were forced her to rethink some of her own approaches.
Yes. So we end up in the Maserite ship. It ends up attacking the Enterprise, and they can't shoot back because they're in warp, and you can't shoot phase cannons don't work. And I'm like, why doesn't Archer know this? Like, what would the captain not know about such a major weakness of one of his primary weapon systems?
As one of the people who sort of worked on the ship while it was even mm-hmm. being built, he ought to know this.
Yeah.
It would have been better, instead of Archer asking that question, have someone else on the bridge like Hoshi ask the question.
Right.
Right.
And then Malcolm could explain, we can't because of the light speed and the particles, and I'm working on the problem, but I haven't solved it yet.
Right. Section 31 hasn't stolen the technology from someone else yet.
Yeah.
you know, I do like, well, this is one of the things I like about Enterprise, is that the Starfleet of this era is not all powerful. It is outgunned or outclassed by other species. They are weaker than the Mezar, who have shielding as opposed to hull plating, which is the same thing, I know. But
they're slightly weaker, but not a lot. Yeah.
Right.
Because there's a question, and Archer even asked T'Pol, what's their speed? And she says, comparable to Federation.
Right.
And it turns out they're just ever so slightly faster.
Mm-hmm. Right. Another thing I like about this is Admiral Forrest shows up several times. He's the one who changes their orders. Time to go, you go pick her up. But when Archer presents him with this issue of Valar is potentially not telling him the truth or the whole story, and you've got the Mezar, and he wants to just take her back, Forrest says, I don't know if that's a good idea, but he doesn't order Archer to do it. He says, you're the commander on the spot. You're however many light years out. It's your decision. And I really like the fact that they do this in this series, is that they make it explicit, like, the commander on the spot, he's the one who's got the more information. I'm not going to armchair quarterback from Earth.
Yeah, I think he's the only admiral, at least in the classic era of Star Trek, who isn't a total jerk trying to countermand the captain all the time.
Oh yeah, right. Admiral Nechayev. I mean, she was actually a good admiral, but wow, was she a jerk?
She was a jerk. Yes. some of the modern Trek, there's some better admirals, but yeah. The interesting moment where Valar notes how awkward T'Pol's role must be, being supportive of Archer, but also being a Vulcan, and how that there might be some conflict in that, which is emblematic. This is actually the major character conflict that T'Pol has in this series, is she's stuck between two worlds. She's got the people of her ship that she has a hierarchical role in the command of the ship, and yet she's also responsible to Vulcan, which may have competing priorities with the priorities for the ship. And I do like that they highlight that. I mean, this is a T'Pol episode, right? Mm-hmm. So they do highlight her conflict.
Well, not just that, but also her personal feelings. You know, of course, Vulcans do have feelings. They just don't show them. They suppress them. But her own, feelings of developing friendship, which gets called out at the end of the episode for Archer. Just seeing him as her superior, but also as someone she can trust as a friend.
Right. And that trust is tested. I mean, Archer, when T'Pol says, trust me, Valar has a good reason, Archer says, well, I don't trust your judgment of her. Like, I don't trust you. He basically says that she's telling the truth. And he's even willing to take the risk that Valar will be killed if he takes her back, and says, because I need to save my own crew. He is really ready to, even though the Enterprise took out that one Mezar ship, was able to fight it off. He's still willing to risk her dying to save his crew from this, from these attacks.
Until T'Pol has that more in-depth conversation with Valar and learns more of what's going on. She doesn't know all of it. but she learns enough to go back to Archer and say, I'm really convinced and I've never asked for anything, but I'm asking for this. And he agrees at that point.
Although one of the reasons she gives Valar is Archer's resentment toward the Vulcans. And I'm wondering, was it really Archer's resentment that's driving him here? I mean, maybe in part, I guess, but he resents the Vulcans for holding humans back. That's been one of this fundamental character traits.
But he's open-minded enough to work with a Vulcan and even approve to Paul. He just doesn't like Vulcan governmental policy in general. And they let Valar express the Vulcan point of view about, you know, okay, when we met them, they had just come out of a global thermonuclear war. And now they want to suddenly join the galactic community and start gallivanting around, and you just came out of a major thermonuclear war. Maybe we want to go slow on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Now, speaking of which, the Vulcans don't apparently have the same concerns about the Mezar, or at least treat them the same way. Even though the Mezar have their own internal conflicts, they're interfering. I mean, they are getting involved in their internal conflicts.
And they already have Warp 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting, the double standard. And apparently Mezar doesn't have the concept of diplomatic immunity, which would be the case here.
Well, and again, this is corruption, too. This is government corruption, too. So even if they did have it, it wouldn't matter because they'll do whatever they have to do to protect their corruption, their hold on the government.
Yeah, so these criminals wouldn't honor diplomatic immunity anyway. I mean, they try to kill Valar. Mm-hmm. And the reason it happens in sickbay is so John Billingsley can get a paycheck this week. Yes. Because he's otherwise not in the episode at all. Dr. Phlox has like one scene.
Right.
And whenever you see a character who has like one scene in an episode, this is just the writers being nice to them so they get a paycheck. Because exactly. if you get one scene, if you get one line of dialogue, you got to be paid. But if you don't, then if you're not in any scenes, then you don't get paid for that episode. So I have this kind of running counter in my mind of, okay, how many of the regulars have I seen this week? And I can predict who's coming up.
Right. Apparently, this whole thing about taking the Enterprise to Warp 5 finally was a big deal. It was supposed to be, because we've been talked about the Warp 5 engine. It's the first human Warp 5 engine and all this sort of stuff. So they wanted to really amp up the drama.
I'm not sure why, though, because I would have thought if it's rated at Warp 5, you would test that in test flights before certifying it as a Warp 5 rated engine.
Yeah, well, I think the idea was that because they left Space Dock early with the Klingon at the first episode, they weren't able to do that test yet. And so this really was the test. But, you know, of course, they show the ship shuddering as it goes up through the levels of warp and settles out. And
having fires break out in the engine room and stuff.
Yep. Right. Speaking of the ship shuddering, this is one of my complaints. In sick bay, after the Mezar shot up the Dr. Phlox's imaging chamber, the Vulcans show up in the nick of time and start shooting the Mezar ships. And the Enterprise shakes and rumbles for why?
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, it's like, you hear that? That's the Vulcans who've shown up and start our attack. The vacuum of space does not transmit this stuff. Why is your ship shaking?
It can transmit sound to a limited degree, but not what we would have heard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Attacks on one ship are not going to cause another ship a couple of meters away to shudder.
Yeah.
Right. You do sensitive instruments, maybe, but not the whole ship.
Not unless you're blowing them apart and fragments, large fragments of debris are impacting you.
Right. Which they're not. I did notice that and had to point that one out. And then, at the end, you mentioned, Jimmy, that Valar tells T'Pol and Archer that she senses a bond of friendship between them. That is really where we're going to start building on that relationship. I mean, it's already been there, but building on that in the subsequent episodes and seasons. And I think is it season 2 where the Tucker T'Pol relationship kicks off, or is that later?
I think it's more season three.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well.
I mean, there may be elements of it sooner, like when I think he accompanies her back to Vulcan for her almost wedding in season two.
Right.
So it may start there, but my memory is that it really gets going kind of in season three and four.
Okay. So those are all the notes I have.
But right now, they're heading us towards a night in sick bay.
Right.
Which is like, gah. and if you don't know what I'm referring to, Archer confesses to Dr. Phlox in A Night in Sick Bay that he has romantic feelings for T'Pol. And so that's kind of where we're heading right now. But then they're going to fortunately course correct, and T'Pol and Trip are going to become an item.
Yep, that's right.
Which is
right.
Much better.
Yeah, much better. Any other notes on this one, Father Corey?
Nothing here.
Jimmy?
So there's a trope that I often see. This is another kind of television writing thing that happens where you want to show your TV characters doing ordinary things like eating, but you don't actually want to show them doing ordinary things like eating, because it takes away from dialogue if they're chewing, and you want to juice the drama. So one of the things I also kind of have a mental counter going for is how many interrupted meals do we see? And there's one in this where after they've got Valar on the ship, they're eating in the captain's mess, and they've just sat down, and they're starting to eat their food, and they have this conversation, and the issue of age comes up, and all of a sudden Valar is, "I'm tired. I hope you will forgive me for retiring." And she just gets up and leaves without really having eaten anything. And it's like, okay, I know we got into a little bit of uncomfortable territory there, but wow, that was an I'm out of here, dudes.
Yep.
And diplomatically, you would want to eat at least some of the food that your hosts have provided you.
Which was a artichoke, I think it looked like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I was interested by when we finally get to see, so there's no, this, like I said, this is a bottle episode. There are no new external sets. It's every scene happens on Enterprise.
Yep.
We get a couple of view screen things where all you need is a background, but there are no scenes set anywhere else. And so for the first most of the episode, we see the Maserites on screens at most. But then when they finally board Enterprise, we get a more up close look at them than we do when they're on the screen, and they've got gills on their faces. And it's like, is this a partially aquatic species or what? Because in addition to the skunk hair, they've got gills on their cheeks, which is kind of interesting.
It's a trap.
I was thinking Jakar and his augmented gills.
Right. So anything else, Jimmy? That's it?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. So then we'd right now like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create the Secrets of Star Trek. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue the Secrets of Star Trek and all the shows at StarQuest. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. We'd also like to thank Victor Lambs, who edited this episode. So that's it from us. What did you think of Fallen Hero? You can let us know by commenting on the show at sqpn.com/trek, our Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, send an email to trek@sqpn.com, or visit our Discord community at sqpn.com/discord. You can also watch The Secrets of Star Trek on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/StarQuestMedia, where you can also leave a comment. We'll be back next time when we'll be discussing the film, the final of the Next Generation films, Star Trek Nemesis. Until then, Father Corey Stika, thank you for joining me in sharing The Secrets of Star Trek.
Yay, I mean, thanks,
Jimmy Aitken, thank you as well.
Thanks, Dom, and live long and prosper.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Star Trek on StarQuest. And remember, those Nuvian masseuses have 12 fingers on each hand.